Badnaw's CEDH podcast. Today we will be interviewing the Oktoberfest 2022 champion and seasoned MTG pro, Brian Koval, better known as his online moniker, Bosh and Roll. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Adam, better known as Poppy Phobia.
What's up, everybody?
And our special guest today is Brian himself.
Hello, happy to be here.
But before we get into today's episode, we have a few triggers to resolve in our upkeep.
Awesome. Thank you, Kian. So to start with, for today's episode, we're going to shout out all of our high-tier patrons. Thank you to Dute, Usable Object, Senator Tom, Scorish, Unorthodox Bird, Jeff Bezos, Domino, Geos Justin, and our newest Chadnaws patron, Just Ice. If you'd like to become a patron of Sadnaws, you can do so at patreon.com/sadnaws, where you can earn amazing perks like your name in a podcast episode, playmats, signed foil ad nauseums, and even a guest appearance on an episode. For our next trigger, though, I think we're going to hand it off to our guest, Brian.
What's up, everyone? I am Brian, a.k.a. Bosh and Roll on the internet. You can primarily find me on YouTube. That's B-O-S-H, the letter N-R-O-L-L. That's my primary zone. I also interact on Twitter, and those are pretty much the two places I am. But I have Patreon, I have a podcast of my own, Eternal Glory, mostly Legacy, but we do talk about Vintage and CEDH and other non-rotating Eternal formats. And if you start at YouTube, there's links in every video description that you can find me everywhere I am.
Hell yeah. That Eternal Glory podcast is like my favorite podcast to listen to. It's so much fun. And you guys definitely do not hold back your opinions on that show.
No, let it rip.
Yeah. Other than that, don't forget to smash the like button and hit subscribe. And for those of you listening on a podcast platform like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, make sure you leave us a review and a rating because it'll help us to reach new audiences. And with that, we're going to move on to our main phase. So you heard that right. For today's episode, we are going to be interviewing the well-established and seasoned Legacy Pro player, Brian Koval. Brian obviously runs a popular YouTube channel known as Bosh and Roll, and at Oktoberfest was most definitely the best Magic player in the building. He proved that as well by winning his first ever CDH tournament. First one he ever competed in, took down the whole thing. I think that speaks volumes for Brian as a player. So today we're going to be going through Brian's thought process at Oko, the rituals and strategies he implements, and then his thoughts on the format as it sits today. So let's get into it. So like every podcast you've ever been on, every interview you've ever had, we're going to start with the blatant obvious. Do you want to tell us how you first started playing CDH and then kind of get into what your viewpoint on the format is as a whole, since you're one of the few players that have been around since Commander's been around?
Yeah, like Adam hinted at, I've done a lot of interviews where I answered this question already, but if you're new, hearing this for the first time, I was a circuit judge on Grand Prix and stuff in 2008, 2009, which was just a couple years after Sheldon and his friends invented Commander for their friend group, and it started getting pushed out, so I have been in touch with Commander almost since its inception. I got into CEDH actually a long time ago. I wrote an article in 2009 for Star City Games where I advocated maybe we should stop pulling punches in this format, at least find a table where we want to play a little stronger. There's a really shockingly embarrassing deck list in that article that would not be competitive by anyone's measure anymore, but the mentality was there. But I do enjoy casual EDH as well. I got into the current era of truly busted CEDH in May of 2021. One of my Patreon subscribers asked me to do it. That's where all my videos come from. My Patreon subs just asked me to play stuff on the channel. And if you're interested in that, go check that Patreon. But Patreon subscriber Akia was like, hey, I have this Teshar deck I want you to try. I know you're good with KCI, Kark Clan Ironworks in Modern. I've seen you play it in other formats. It's basically the same thing. So I just went to Twitter, was like, hey, what's CEDH? Who wants to hold my hand through this? And Hermit Druid was on the scene immediately, as he tends to be on Twitter. And then Callahan from the Mind Sculptors and Spleenface rounded out the pod. And that was the first pod I ever played CEDH in. And it was pretty strong, some strong opinions, some strong community members hanging out. And I just started clicking the follow button on anyone that Hermit or Spleen or Callahan were interacting with on Twitter, and I've kind of been in the sphere and making friends since then.
Yeah, Nathan's a really nice guy. We met him at Richmond. He definitely had a lot to say. I don't know if you've talked to him recently about Dargo Timna. He definitely was selling that deck to a lot of people. Yeah, he's a really nice guy. Good for the community.
Nathan he goes to extremes. just one topic at a time. Extremely interested in it, and then it's gone. What's the next thing? And Ishai Jeska, when he was really hot on that, that was the first CEDH deck I really put together in paper, and I still have it now. It's a fun one. Fits a lot of my legacy play styles. But yeah, he was hard on that. And then I listened to the episode of Casual Magic he was on that happened to be recorded when he was on Timna Dargo. And that's all they talked about for like an hour and a half. It was pretty intense.
Nathan is like one of my favorite people in the community simply because he's just so like so opinionated. And it's the most fun person to talk to. Like when you're just like want to just hash out like ideas and things like that. Like Nathan's got ideas and he is not afraid to tell you about them. And it's just so fun to talk to. And it's kind of similar to you. Like Jeska Ishai was my first like real introduction into like the real broken CDH, right? When like you're like, let me like build a deck in paper and kind of get on it. Because for our play group, like all my friends played Ad Nauseam. And I was like, I can win without Ad Nauseam. I don't need this card. And so I built Jeska Ishai, which is like Jeskai Delver in CDH. It's just like fun shit to pull off. And so talking with Nathan about that when we were in Richmond was like a really, really good time. But that pod, man, that's like kind of a hell pod for an introduction to CDH. You get Nathan, Morgan, and Callahan, and then Brian Koval, and they're like, hey, let's teach you how to play CDH by waffle stomping you a few times.
Well, actually, Nathan didn't have Magic Online, which is where we held the pod. So I recruited Jarvis Yu to be our fourth player, and Nathan just ran commentary over the whole thing. That video is still out there on my channel if anyone wants to see it. And I did win two out of the three pods with Teshar, and the one that I lost was because my first two draw steps plus Sensei's Top didn't come up with a white source. I had the protected win in hand again, and then Jarvis snuck through. I don't think any of the CEDH people won any of the games. It was me and Jarvis.
That's cool. Floor. Yeah, that's something that like I've noticed because like we happen to be in the same circles and we met each other for the first time at Magic 30. And another really, really well-established 60-card player that was there was Matt Sperling. And so I got a lot of games in with you and Matt just playing and seeing the vibe and kind of getting like some of your guys' opinions and things on the format while we were playing and enjoying some games. And that was something that I noticed that like you sit down as a CDH player and you're like, oh, these 60 card players don't know what they're getting into. And then you get on get at the table and you're just easily outmatched in like skill level by, you know, actual pro players. And so I think like at Magic 30, I think I got one game on you and it was the first game we ever played. And then I never won another game against you or Matt. I didn't get a game over Matt the entire weekend. And I think that's something that a lot of people expect that like, hey, like first off, CDH is still Magic. So there's still a skill cap there that players don't acknowledge. And then not only is there a skill gap there, but like the best CDH players don't compare to the best Magic players. And that was kind of something that I alluded to in our intro there, that like at Oko, you were hands down the best Magic player in the building.
Yeah, there's a couple layers to all the things you just said. They're playing Magic well is a skill. Knowing CEDH is also a skill. I made a lot of mistakes when I first started jumping on streams. Like Misplay invited me right away. Modanon invited me right away when they saw I was in the space. I played on a video with Rebel really early on with some of the high rollers in the format, and I was making a lot of mistakes, like keeping just reasonable lands and spell kind of hands that don't go busted. I wasn't really using my free mulligan the way that you're supposed to. I wasn't assessing for turn order the way that I was supposed to. There's a lot of stuff that is really important to CEDH as a different skill set. Even in the finals of Oktober, a player had a Fiend Artisan in play and was about to untap with it. And I had to ask the other two players at the table. I was like, guys, what does this do if he untaps with this? Because, like, I know the text on the card, but can he, like, tutor for an untap effect and then tutor for, like, Oracle Sacred Guy? Like, does this all happen at once? Do we have two or three turns to deal with this thing? How bad does this get and how quickly? And I needed help from the table. But that's another layer of CEDH, that there are people you can ask and they are invested in solving the same problem you are when you're in those 3v1 situations. And there is a lot that, coming from any specific format, you bring as a format expert, but also Magic the Gathering at its fundamental level has a lot of really universal skills that do translate. And if you know everything that's ever happened in CEDH, but you haven't drafted 15, 20 times in your life to really understand, like, the nuts and bolts of moving creatures around in combat and building a curve into your deck and stuff, you're missing something. If you're coming from Standard into Legacy, you're missing something. There's a lot of pieces, and I've been playing this game for a long time, and I play every format, so I get all those pieces and can put them together. And I don't come with any nonsense, like, I've won a Grand Prix, who are you, jokers? Like, I don't carry that into a game. I'm just like, okay, what does this do? I'm not afraid to be like, can we beat this? Or whatever. Explain this interaction to me. I might be able to stop it. Always be willing to learn, and then you will learn, and then you'll know that for next time.
Yeah, that's really
cool. You don't have an ego at the table.
Right. And on the subject of ego, real quick, the like framing of this episode of like Magic Pro, best player in the room at Oktoberfest, deeply uncomfortable with that. Not in a way that you need to apologize or anything for, but the idea of like what is a Magic Pro is something that I kick around in my head a lot, and I don't think this is imposter syndrome, because like I do know that I'm good at Magic, I do have a good resume, I do have a successful content platform, all those things. But Magic Pro to me, like, I've been reading Inquest magazine since I was 10 and following Magic Pro coverage in its existence. I have never been that. Like, there is a upper crust of the upper crust, like Paolo Vitor, Domo de Rosa. And I put Matt Sperling in that crust as well. He had a top four at Worlds last year. Like, that's a real pro player. I've played on the Pro Tour 4 times in my life, but I day two'd 2 of them and bricked out 2 of them, only cashed 1 of them. And, you know, what is a Magic Pro is a question that I kick around. And, like, just the ego of all of that, like these weird names and stuff. I make my living playing Magic. So according to the dictionary, I am a Magic Pro, but there's also a defined pro league that I've never been close to being part of. So all of that is our thoughts kicking around in my head. And like, I'm not walking around. I don't walk into the command zone like Magic Pro on the scene, part the C's. Let me sit at whatever table I want. Like, I'm not carrying that, because I genuinely don't believe it.
So you're not walking into like a table and like telling someone to get up because the pros have arrived. And
right.
You're sitting in my first seat, buddy. Get out. I go first.
Right. Yeah. No, I go first as the top seed in any game I sit down at.
I think that's a good baseline to establish, though. That's kind of how you perceive yourself in the format and how you see it. I think for us as players, like me and Kian, right? Like, when we see someone that enters an event that's been on the Pro Tour or makes content outside, like as much as we have like lots of friends that make money from Magic, that I guess would fit that definition of pro players because it's their profession is Magic. I think that we look at like a lot of competitors, like I would consider like even Drake a pro Magic player, right? Because this is a person who spikes tournaments constantly at a level that is many people would consider a much higher like professional tier, you know, winning SCG events and things like that. Whereas like for CEDH, a lot of us are, I guess I would refer to as laymans of Magic, because the only events we do are EDH, you know, which is kind of where that perception, I guess, that we've presented upon you in this episode comes from.
Right. It's all a matter of perspective. Like, yeah. My mom likes to gas me up at parties, brag to her friends, like, my son's one of the best Magic players in the world. And my perception of among tournament players, because tournaments is how I've engaged with Magic most of my time playing Magic, I am not usually the best player in the room. At a Star City Open, I'm probably not one of the best 10 players in the room. There's some really dedicated people like Harlan Fear and Zach Allen, Ross Merriam, who show up to all of those things. They're all better than me, abstractly. And then above all of them, even, like the actual Magic Pro League, like the Mats and the Javier Dominguez and all of these people, just at this crazy upper crust where I have to zoom out in my brain and remember that, you know, Marrow posted on his blog, it got kind of memed a couple weeks ago, a lot of Magic players, the majority of Magic players, don't know what a Planeswalker is. This is a thing Mark Rosewater said. It's like, who are these people? what? Like, because I can zoom out. You can only zoom out as far as you know, like, what exists, right? Like, I'm like, okay, my focus on pro Magic, I can zoom out to FNM level Magic, but those are still tournaments. You got to zoom out to Commander Night at the LGS. Then you got to zoom out to kitchen table play. Then you got to zoom out to, like, these people don't know there is a Pro Tour. They don't know there is FNM. They don't know what a Planeswalker is. They just buy a few packs a couple times a year and add those packs to the deck they've been building for the last 18 years. And that deck might have 150 cards in it. That's just what they know Magic as. Like, I guess if we're zooming out that far, I'm easily one of the best players in the world. But, you know, bring up the magnifying glass and it's a different story.
We had a friend, remember when Spencer told us about, like, I think in our first episode when we had our friends on, we had our friend Spencer come on and tell us, like, his introduction to Magic. And it was very much like, kitchen table, doesn't know what a Planeswalker is. Like, never, him and his brother just shoved cards together and made decks. And then they went to an FNM and he had Silver Border cards in his deck. And yeah. Guys were like, what the hell is this, dude? Like, you can't be doing that. And like that, it is weird to like put on that, those blinders or kind of perceive that, like, oh yeah, there's a whole group of people that like Magic is just what they think it is, you know, and there is no structure or rules to it besides what they made up at home. So it's kind of hard to think about.
Yeah, I played for years as you draw until your hand has 7 cards every turn. You can play any number of lands every turn, because the idea of playing one land a turn and drawing one card a turn just felt too slow. I was in literally 4th grade, so like a kid brain. And we also knew how to play the Pokemon TCG around the same time, which does move a lot faster. So we were like, yeah, 7 cards in hand. You draw cards every turn and you play lands every turn. We're doing what we're supposed to here.
Yeah, this makes sense.
I think anyone from that era also knows, like, we thought Dark Ritual put 3 swamps into play. Like, why would I spend 1 card to get 3 mana one time? Or like Carplusen Forest, tap, take 1, put a forest token into play. Why would I take damage just for mana one time? That doesn't make any sense. Like, we thought it was just freaking, I don't know, terrain generator or something. It's like a totally free thawing glaciers. That's just how we played for a long time. And until you contact an LGS or you have like an older cousin who actually knows anything to explain it to you, and those people are out there and they outnumber us a lot.
By quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah. Like, to them, you're a pro player. You have a podcast. You go to tournaments. Like, wow.
That was, we did we did an episode that comes out tomorrow. At time of recording, it comes out tomorrow, where we talked about, like, this is the first event that we went to as a group where, like, people were like, oh my gosh, are you guys the Sadnoz guys? And we were, like, absolutely dumbfounded. Like, that people,
we're like, what, we, like, have fans here? We have fans?
Or even that people were like, we love your episode and we care about, like, the things you say. We really listen to that. I'm like, you should not. Like, we are so average in player skill, like, that
we have bad takes. Just go listen to ITN or something if you want.
Yeah, get used to that stuff. The more you release, the more people are going to see it. And then, like, there is a perception that anyone who creates content is just worth listening to. And I'm not saying you're not, but I, like, lived and died by what was written on Star City Games for like the mid 2000s. Like those Star City writers from that era are just like gods in my brain. And then in like 2008, I just had something to say. I think I top 64 at a Legacy Grand Prix or something. And I just sent an email to Star City. I was like, if I write a tournament report, do you want it? My deck's kind of cool. And they were just like, yeah, sure, whatever. Send it in. And then I wrote a bunch of articles for Star City. Like, I was just one of them because I sent an email. I'm a freaking nobody. So the idea that you care enough to create content does put you in this space where you're going to get some fans or people who, you know, think more of you than you think of yourself. Like, oh, we're just some jerks goofing around with microphones. But, you know, you're doing something and you care enough to do it. And that's worth something. And like my channel grew mostly over the COVID lockdown. Like that's where I really dug in and got my first 15,000 followers or so. And leaving your house for the first time in 2 years, and everybody knows you, everybody wants to talk to you. And even in the bathroom at Magic 30, I was literally in the line to poop and someone was like, oh my God, Brian Koval, I've been looking for you all weekend, like shouting my first and last name in a men's room. I'm just like, oh my God.
It was
like,
I'm
just trying
get
to fly under the radar, shuffle until the toilet's open. Like, this is not where I want to talk to anyone. And it's just like, and the guy was even like, I was looking for you. I didn't know I'd find you in a bathroom, though. And it's like, yeah, I do use the bathroom as a person. kind of weird. And it's given me an appreciation for like Lindsay Lohan and like the people who just like went nuts with early stardom. Like I have like 30,000 followers across my various platforms. I can't imagine having millions of fans around the world. I'd hide in my house and go nuts too, honestly, based on what I've seen with my like small perspective.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Brian Koval is the Lindsay Lohan of Magic the Gathering.
Yep. I'm going to make like 5 or 6 incredible, timeless, perfect movies and then just go completely insane.
Just fall off the face of the...
I need my Mean Girls moment and then I'll fade to obscurity.
So we're going to segue into Oko, and I'll let Kian handle that segue. But before we do, there's something that you touched on that I want to hit right away because I think it's really important. So you talked about like the perception of people knowing who you are, right? And something that we talk about a lot with other creators that we have in the scene is like at a CDH event, right? We sit down, right? Me and Kian, our faces on our YouTube videos. Most people in the community know of us now. So we sit down, we put our Sad Gnaws playmat on the table. And everybody's like, oh, you guys are the Sad Gnaws guys. And all of a sudden, the game at the table has changed because now everyone at the table knows that we do content.
We are content creators.
So now there's like this, view of us or this perception that like these guys know what's up. So all other three players at the table are now eyes on you, right? And they're kind of like they're very watchful of what you do at the table, like almost as though you're the threat from the start. And our friends like Sick Robot Reed from Into the North, he talks about this a lot. He's like, I don't wear any merch, I don't put any playmats down that say my channel, because everybody knows Into the North and everybody respects that play group. So as soon as they sit down, if they find out that's who you're with or who you are, the whole table changes. Now you're the threat and it's a 3v1 from the start. Same with Ian. Ian will talk about it all the time. Like as soon as someone at the table goes, oh, you're a comedian, he's done, right? Like that pod is, he has to work so much harder to win the game. So something I wanted to ask you is like, obviously in a 1v1 format, you don't have to worry about that because it's you versus your opponent. So it doesn't matter that you're Bosh and Roll, right? Because like, if you're just better, you're going to win majority of the time, right? Obviously there's things that are out of your hand, but majority of the time the better player wins in 60 card. In EDH though, it's a little different, and there's a lot of factors that are much more out of your hand. Variance plays a bigger factor, and I always say, I'm a big preacher of this, that if the other opponents at the table don't want you to win the game, like if they collectively decide like Brian Koval's not winning this game, then you're not winning that game from the start. It's infinitely harder for you to win the game if three players mull to interaction, mull to a way to stop you, mull for board state pieces that hinder your game plan. So did you feel like in your CDH tournament experience that like, because you were probably much more under the radar at Oko, like not as many people probably know who you are. Not as many people point out that like, oh, you're Brian Koval from Bosh and Roll, because you're not as popular in the CDH community as you are in like other formats of the community. Do you think that that helped you at all in your performance? Like, do you feel like there was a benefit to people maybe not knowing who Brian Koval was? And when people do know who you are, if you experience that at Oco, where someone was like, oh my God, you're Bosch and Roll, like the guy that's played on Pro Tours and the Legacy dude, like, did that affect your games in any way?
I don't believe that it did, at least not in the way that you're describing, where the 3v1 starts from turn zero. I had a lot of people come up to me and say, like, you're the reason I know what Legacy is. I bought my first dual lands after watching your content for a year. Like, a lot of really nice things. I signed a lot of stuff. I signed one of Ken's novels. It's kind of funny, like, signing someone else's book that they wrote. But they were getting a bunch of people to sign it. It was kind of cool. But, like, people did kind of know who I was, or if someone at the table was like, wait, are you Bosch and Roll? I'm like, yeah. And then the other two players are like, oh, wow. They didn't recognize me up front, but did at least know my name. And I think there's kind of, like, that's part of the political game, is getting people to trust you and believe you. And I think it's a skill to diffuse that moment of, oh, you're a comedian, we got to shut this guy down, or whatever. You're Bosch and Roll, we got to shut this guy down. Because the flip side of that is they know who you are because they perceive you to be good at Magic. And if the best player at the table is accurately assessing threats and helping the other two players recognize that player C is the threat, not me in seat B, like, look, guys, I can help stop this. This is developing. You're focused on me. Just get that flow going. And really, I love flying under the radar, just not only in games, but in life. Like, I'm the person who's, like, you know, hyper conscious of, like, when I'm grocery shopping, I see someone come around the corner with two kids and I, like, slide my cart over, make sure they have room to get by, like, way before they're even passing me. Like, I'm just focused on the people around me and keeping a low profile all the time. And just doing that in game as well, especially if the way that I choose to play. I mean, I imagine deck choice matters a lot. Like, Mike, Sad Robot, sitting down with Winota, everyone's like, oh, this guy's got a silver tongue and he plays his deck extremely well. Getting a reputation as kind of a talker. They say the same things about Charles, mono white guy. Just, he can mindslaver anyone with a comment and just get them to do whatever he wants. I think gaining that reputation might be ultimately detrimental, but the type of politicking I do, it's just really honest, where, you know, I go for a win and I get stuffed. And then that whole turn cycle, I got to be like, if I had interaction, I would have pushed my win through. And, you know, nobody can argue with that. And nobody can be mad at you for trying to win. It's EDH. So, yeah. Like, okay, you stuffed me. What's the next objective here? Because it's not me. And just, like, being able to work the table, then, and the deck I choose, Tim Necrom, Blue Farm, you can play slow. I don't play it like a Turbo Nos deck. I would rather have turn two Timna than turn two Adnos in most games. And
it's a blue mid-range deck.
Right, it's a blue mid-range deck.
It, but
yep. The saddest Nos you've ever seen.
Tell me about it.
Yep. like you can't even win if you resolve a turn two ad nauseum. Like, there's not enough zero cost mana. That's just not what the deck's trying to do. So if you come in guns blazing, throwing rituals on the stack in the first two or three turns, you deserve to lose. And if you're just like, I'm just drawing cards here, just whatever, you help the table win a few fights over some other win attempts, and everyone settles in, and the 3v1 just doesn't need to happen. I don't know. Maybe now that I've won a tournament, the next time it'll be a little different. But
people, you're on the hot list. You're on the shit list now. As soon as you sit down, we get them.
I mean, that's fine. I think you're going to lose a lot of games to the other two players at the table if you focus on me.
Well, like, the shit list, it doesn't work either. So, I mean, like, you played against Ian in the final four. Ian's won, like, three CDH tournaments, and top 16 is almost everyone he enters. So clearly the shit list isn't working.
It doesn't work. Like, right.
Like, you sit down, same with like Reed and Morgan. Like, those are players that in our community are at like the top tier of like CDH guys, and they're consistently performing. So like saying like, oh, he's the threat, get him, like they still find a way around it. So it's not really working. And I like that you said the saddest Nas you've ever seen, because like our channel name comes from Blue Farm. Like we all played Blue Farm and we all have experience with it, and like, yeah, it's not a good Nas.
It's mainly my Nas's. I can't tell it because I used to play Rog'Sai before Blue Farm. I can't tell you how many games I've gone like turn two or turn one Nas from 38 plus and lost.
Yeah, the deck's just not built to do that, and the community needs to understand that. So at Oko, I think I resolved ad nauseum once before turn 7 or 8, and it was a game where I used Cavern of Souls to shove Ranger Captain in on turn 3, and then I easily won unprotected on turn 4. That lined up. I just happened to have Kull and Nas in my hand with an uncounterable Ranger Cap. Like, the deck can do that, but a lot of the time in that tournament, I was using Ad Nauseam as Thoughtseize, where it's just like, in your end step, before I untap Ad Nause, you dispel it, and I'm like, okay, untap. And then I do something else. Just don't even fight over it, because that's the fact it's an instant that people need to interact with is worth more than whatever the actual printed text on the card is, as far as Adnaz is concerned, for me.
You're like, cast Adnaz. All right, they respond. You're like, all right, Mystic, Ristic, Esper trigger.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, like, I might dispel back if I have a Chrom in play to get a draw.
Yeah.
Like, just cycle my dispel. And with the upside of Adnaz resolves, if they don't have a... like, that's what I'm looking for. That's what that card is for.
That's funny.
So going into Oko, was there anything that you did to prepare for it that you typically don't do when prepping for other like tournaments and other like formats like Legacy, Standard, or?
I don't believe there was anything different I did. Basically, when I knew Oko was on my calendar about 2 months out, I really dialed in on Blue Farm. I was playing a lot of Jeskai Ishai, and I was working on a Rafine deck with my friend. Neither of those I would take to an open tournament. I always start with the best deck, or what the community points to as the best deck, mm-hmm. when I want to get a true understanding of a format when there's stakes on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And I just learned Blue Farm, played it through a bunch of Discord games, guessed it on some streams, and then just talked to people about card choices and got really familiar with how Blue Farm plays and how I want to play it. Spent about 2 months doing that. And then the week before the tournament, I did what I do the week before every tournament, which is obsess over the last three cards. And just, well, what if I this, but then this, but if the metagame's this. And I just, my last thing up to the morning of the event, I was like, do I want Dispel or Hydro Blast as my 100th card? Is what, and that's just a meta decision. Like, am I going to play against a lot of Winota, or am I going to play against a lot of Blue? And I ended up with Dispel and played against zero Winota. So just coin flipped my way into the correct answer. And as far as tournament rituals, like, go to bed early, get a good breakfast, hydrate. Anyone who was staying with Mikey, I was staying with Mikey, and he was kind of the hangout party house, because he lived 10 minutes from the venue, and he's a popular guy in the format. And many people bore witness to me around 10 o'clock saying, okay, I'm going to bed. And they were all like, waves of people were just showing up to start partying. And they're like, oh, really? I'm just like, yeah, really? I have a tournament tomorrow. Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah. We just got there. I think was it Saturday? I was hoping to get like a game with you, and you were already in bed. I'm like, it's,
yep,
it's 10:30. What?
Yeah, no way. Saturday, like Friday, I got to bed like right when I wanted to. Saturday, I jumped into a casual game, which is what I enjoy doing when I'm not in a tournament. And as casual games tend to do, it just bogged down and went forever and ever, and nobody could really punch through. And what I wanted to spend an hour on, I ended up spending 2 hours on, and it was close to 11. And I was like, I got to get to bed. Thanks for the game. And I just ran away as soon as it was over.
It was, that game was fun. I was like making four sapperlings and upkeep. It was quite a good game. But, yeah.
I don't know about you with with your casual games, but at least in our friend group, it's basically a shit show on who can make the best deal and then backstab each other. I don't know if that holds true with your close friends, but
for me, it's genuinely who gets mad at each other, and then someone will make a wild, irresponsible attack to kill the person that they've been tit for tatting with, and then they're dead on the backswing, which is also how that game Saturday night ended.
Yes. It was, for us, our friend group gets so toxic and casual. Not because, like, not like toxic with each other, but like we'll be playing a game.
No, toxic and, like, with each other.
Someone yesterday scheming symmetried to let two other people tutor because they were mad at another person.
Nice, nice.
I was just playing lands and he didn't give me a tutor.
But that's just, we like, and we'll dive into casual because, like, you have been playing casual for quite a while, and like playing with you really opened my eyes to like how you truly enjoy EDH outside of just, like, you know, for competition, which was really cool to see. But something that you brought up that I thought was really important was you're talking about like some of your rituals and stuff like that. And something that I noticed, and we talked about it a little bit at Oko, was there was a point where I came up to you right before, I think, the cut to top 16. And you were sitting on your phone and you were like playing like Candy Crush, like in the corner by yourself. And I kind of sat down next to you. And I know I shouldn't do this because like everybody talks about this, about like when you see someone like in their space, in their zone, like just leave them alone. But I sat down next to you and I was like, do you do this all the time? Like, do you just fucking play Candy Crush? And you're like, in between every round, I just disassociate, play a phone game. I don't think about nothing. And then that's what gets me prepared. And I was like, this guy's crazy.
Yeah. I posted this. One of the magic influencer people were like, what's your guilty pleasure phone game, a couple days ago. And I tweeted a screenshot. I'm like 8,000 consecutive days login on Marvel Puzzle Quest. It's like approaching 9 years or something. And
holy
shit. Or maybe it was 3,000. I don't know. Yeah, that makes more sense. 8,000 is a lot of days. But it's like thousands of... I've logged in every day for close to 9 years on Marvel Puzzle Quest. And sometimes it's just like, you know, you're on the toilet. Second toilet reference of this episode, by the way. Let's see if we could get to three. Sometimes it's just like you're on the toilet and you do something for 2 minutes. Or Magic tournaments, it's great. Like having a spread of things you can do that are not Magic or not walking around wallowing about the round you just lost or not thinking about the next round you have to play. I play some Marvel Puzzle Quest. I'm into Marvel Snap these days. I'm studying French on Duolingo, so I'll take some French lessons. Like, just do anything else. I used to be into Hearthstone. There's one tournament a couple of years ago where I brought my iPad and I had my phone, and I ID'd into top 8. And for the hour where everyone else was playing, I had Marvel Puzzle Quest on my phone and Hearthstone on my iPad. And I was doing both, like one hand on each. And like... right. And somebody else came up to me and they're like, are we safe to draw? And like, without looking at the standings, I was like, you are, but your opponent's not. And they're like, this guy's double fisting games. We should probably believe him.
This guy's double fisting games. That's so funny. Cause yeah, I saw that and I was like, what is Brian doing in the corner by himself? And I like went over there and you're just like fucking crushing gems and shit. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. And crushing candy.
Yeah. Crushing, I was like, this guy's serious. But yeah, Oko was very, very cool. Like, I think that whole experience was very fun. It was cool when people would like ask, because like in our play group, we talk all the time about like specs and who we think is going to make top 16 and blah, 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 blah. And like, I think Alan did an interview with me at the beginning of the tournament. And he's like, who are some players that we need to watch out for in this thing? Because I do a lot of tournament casting for CDH. So I'm very like, I'm very well aware of all the players, like most players in the format. I have a good grasp on like who's what and things like that. And so Alan was like, who do you think, like, who are some people we should keep an eye on? And like one of the people, I was like, well, Brian Koval's here. And I've only played with him, you know, one time, but I know what type of player he is. I think that you should keep an eye on him. And then it's just funny because then you win the whole thing. And I was like, oh, there we go. Little cool validation there, but that was like such a cool experience. And to hear people like, because Kian made top 16, you ended up winning the whole thing, and I scrubbed out day one, but I got to hear all the rumblings, right, and like the whispers and everything that's going around. And it's cool to hear as the day progresses, people being like, "Oh, Brian Koval's on Blue Farm. Have you seen what Brian's doing? Like, he's playing really, really well this week."
And this, like, is the first time I've seen someone actually play that deck correctly.
But like, you just you hear all these things and all these people, and it was really cool to see the progression of that throughout the tournament. And then like that finals pod was so intense. It was like it felt like a casual game. It was like 2 hours long. Nobody was like people were putting win attempts on the stack or putting like wins on the table, and nothing was getting through. Nobody was making it happen. And like, I remember like there was a point where us as a play group, we left because Kian made top 16 and then lost in the top 16 cut. We went to celebrate. We're like, top 16, baby. Like, let's go get dumplings and like have a good time. And we're watching your game while we're at the restaurant. And I'm looking at the board state and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, there's like, everybody's got 10 lands, 10 creatures. There's a Fiend Artisan in play. Like the Timna Thrasios player was threatening to win at all times. You guys were like, you could see like fingers pointing at each other as soon as like a spell was put on the stack. Like, it was a game. Like, I think that was one of the best representations of like true CDH in a while.
That we couldn't hear what was being said, because there was definitely a lot of table talk towards the later part of that game.
Yeah, I wish that table was mic'd up, because it was even more representative of fun EDH than you even think it was. And like, the vibe, everyone was cracking jokes. We were all on sort of the same wavelength. No one was like being stuffy because it's the finals. It was the middle of the freaking night. Like, I was asleep when I started that game. Most of that game, my head was just face down in my palm, like with my thumb up to pass priority. Just like, that's how I spent most of that game. Alan was taking some candid pictures, and in all of them, I just look bad. I got like bags under my eyes. I'm slouched down in my seat, if I'm even like have my head up at all. And, you know, through all of that, we were still just like cutting up and like friendly jabbing each other. And like, I think the game started with the Timna Thrasios player. I got made fun of for how I say Thrasios. I guess it's Thrasios. Timna Thrasios player. When we were sitting down, he like made some joke and then like flexed at us. And I just turned to the judge deadpan. I'm like, I'm really uncomfortable right now. He brought guns in here. And like, and then that just like jumped off everything. And like, comedian's really funny. Lives up to his name. And the vibe in that room was just really friendly. And we all were having fun while respecting each other while playing high level Magic that lasted a long time. And that was just a really amazing game to be part of. And I wish everyone could hear the mics. Obviously the casters need something to do, but
yeah,
it was really good.
We have friends that say to us all the time, like, CDH doesn't start till the top 16. 'Cause that's when the games become it's a much higher level of play. And the tone is a lot more relaxed. I mean, you still have it where people that aren't, like super experienced with it, that'll come in and make top 16, and it'll create some different, not perceptions, the word I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but like, when you make top 16, the level of play jumps and the games get a little bit more relaxing. It's still nerve wracking, 'cause like, you're like, I'm so close and whatever, but the play gets a lot more relaxed, because there's a lot more confidence behind each play, and you don't have so much of like people getting unnecessarily mad over things that don't matter, or people getting really angry about something that you've done, or a lot of these weird interactions that you have in Swiss rounds, because EDH derives a lot of it, or CDH derives a lot of its characteristics from EDH, and a lot of those things that come in from casual, like, oh, you did this, well, now I'm upset about it, and I'm going to carry that with the rest. That kind of goes away as the games kind of progress into that higher level. And so, like, you get to top 16.
Less emotional, more analytical, I'd say.
Yeah. So to hear that like your top four is like everybody's cracking jokes, everybody's having fun, but as soon as shit hits the fan, everybody's dialed in and serious about what's going on and resolve things as a table and really work towards representing the game state properly. That's really cool to hear. And I feel like a lot of people miss out on that opportunity because like in Swiss rounds, it's such a hodgepodge of players and a hodgepodge of decks that you don't get that really dialed in experience that I think is the most enjoyable part of CDH.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. There's also something that I want to caution you and the listeners about. The random nonsense, the less experienced people, the people playing suboptimally, is part of the tournament experience. You have to get through the unwashed masses at the bottom, the barbarians, before you get to sit at, you know, the king's table. And if you... This comes up a lot in Legacy, specifically the other major community I'm part of, where people are like, well, I'm built for the winner's metagame, and I just played against some garbage in the first three rounds, and now I'm dead. Like, well, you know, building decks that can survive garbage and can catch a curveball or hit a curveball, whatever you do with a curveball, that's part of the tournament experience. You can't be mad that you lost to, you know, Minsk and Boost decks in round one. Because, you know, does your deck not have a plan for anything outside of the top five decks you identified? Like, you got to be ready. I played against Minsk and Boo and Nezahal in the same pod. I've never seen either of those as decks before. And, you know, just figure it out. Beat them. I don't know. You can't be mad.
I will caution you on talking ill about Minsk and Boo on our channel. Because for some reason... our Discord has a cult following for the hamster deck.
Hamster.
So. No, like, not that the deck is bad. I don't even know what's in the deck, but at no point in my preparation or in any of the streams I've guested on had I ever seen Minsk and Boo as a CEDH commander or Nezahal as a CEDH commander. And then it was late. I think it was the end of day one. So these players had two or three wins already. And we just flopped out this pod, and I was like, well, time to figure out what these decks do and how to beat them. And I did, because my deck isn't built to solve any specific problem. It's built to have a little bit of game against everything, and I can navigate nonsense. And then you end up in the finals pod that's just, you know, four Timna decks. It's like, okay, now we're in the winner's metagame. But you have to survive the Nezahal bracket. My first pod, I played against Xur and Temeshi. Neither of these, I mean, like, Xur is one of those eye roll casual, too strong for casual commanders from the original days of the format. And, like, I know Xur is capable of some stuff, but I have not played against it in CEDH. I've never seen a Temeshi deck in CEDH, and got to figure that one out, too. I think the third player at that pod was non-blue Timna Tana, which is also not a deck that I had a ton of experience playing against. So just three decks. Timna Tana is obviously a real one, but, you know, Xur and Temeshi, I don't know. Like, you gotta beat that too before you get to sit at the four Timna table.
Yeah, we won't talk about how I lost to Temeshi. We'll just move past that topic real quick. So then something that we've kind of already like dove into a little bit that I want to touch on again is politics in CDH. So you've told me, and I've heard you say it online, a quote that I think is, like, really amazing, which is that if you're not politicking in EDH, you're leaving free wins on the table. Like, if it's a skill that can help you win games and progress games, why wouldn't you do it? And there's a lot of players out there. I think that this is, and we'll get into the weeds of this, but there's this opinion out there, and it may or may not have been caused by me on Twitter, that 60 card players despise politics in EDH and think that it shouldn't belong in the format, and that you should just put your spells on the stack and shut up. And you obviously don't carry that same opinion. You might carry it to a certain extent, but You've been very public about your viewpoint on politics in the format. So why don't you kind of elaborate for those that don't quite know or haven't heard you say it before, and then we can kind of dive into it from there.
I will say straight from the start, the opinion of shut up and play your cards, and people can say the sky is purple, they're still just wrong. You know, you can't shut up and play your cards in this format. That's not how it works. And the approaching politics, or at least table talk, in I guess defining table politics is an important part of this. If we're talking about like sad robot tricking someone into dock-siding into their own dress down, there's like that Jedi mind trick level of politics that even in 60 card formats, people whisper about Jedi mind tricks, and the response is usually, if you're shooting this angle, why didn't you just, you know, build a better deck or whatever? Why don't you play better if you need to focus on this kind of stuff? But then there's politics of like, this spell is going to kill us. What can you do about it? You have priority. If you can get this going, or like even just revealing, like I have Pyroblast or Flusterstorm, I have some kind of soft counter that might be able to help us win a fight, but someone ahead of me in priority order needs to do something about it. Like, that sort of politics is integral to surviving a table. Just be willing to reveal your conditional counter spell and let the table know how you can help if you're all about to die. That sort of stuff is so important. That's just playing the game. And the idea of like just hiding your hand, like you have priority, make a decision. And then you die because you did, we're unwilling to have a conversation. It's just bad. And I used my favorite example already of like you lose a fight over your game winning spell and then you just get to hang out for a while. And I love that moment in games where you're just like hands in the air, like three cards in your hand. Maybe you have a Rhystic or a Chrom or an Esper Sentinel in play and you're just like, yeah, I can't help with this. I just lost the fight. I'm empty over here, which both paints you as not the threat and you can't help in any other fights. So other people got to spend their cards keeping the table alive while you just slowly draw cards from Chrom. And you just sort of, you know, I blew my load. I'm out. I can't help. I got nothing going on. Don't worry about me. And then three turns later, you shoot another win attempt down the barrel when everyone else has beat each other into goop. That part of politicking is, I don't know, that just seems like playing the game. Calling it politicking doesn't even seem like the right thing.
I think it's integral to this format.
Yeah, absolutely. At Oktober, I can only think of two like really preposterous politicking moments that I did. One of them was in my first game with Ian and Trevor in the Swiss rounds. Two of my three finals opponents I had been in a pod with earlier in the day. And I was attempting a win, and in a giant stack with my third win attempt of the turn, I went Adnaz, then Breach, then Mnemonic Betrayal. And like the first two got stuffed, and then the Betrayal was on the stack. And in the middle of a giant stack, I mental misstep something from 5 going to 3, then Ian lightning bolted me at 3 life in EDH, fucking Chad gaming. And and I immediately was just I looked at Trevor and I was like, I can't help you beat Ian if this bolt resolves. And Ian was like, come on, are you serious right now? Like, just really like, do not fall for this table, because I had like a Rhystic Study or something. I think I started the turn with a Remora to keep myself in the counter fight that I knew was coming. So I had a Remora, and just my argument was like, Ian is rolled up over here. He's ahead of you in turn order. I can't help you. My Remora might rebuild me. Let the Mnemonic Betrayal get countered, but you know, counter the bolt for me. And he didn't end up countering the bolt for me, but he did snap Ian Seedboard Muse with that stack. So I got another peel out of it off my Remora that could have, you know, let me keep going. And without having that conversation, and maybe someone would have bought it, because Ian was rolled up. He was going to win on his turn, but Trevor had a different way to kill him. He just natty brain freezed him for like 60 after that giant stack, and he died in his upkeep, or died in his draw step. So like that moment was a lot of fun, because Ian was immediately like, come on, are you serious? but that argument could appeal to someone, because Ian was the threat. And the other one, in the semifinals, a player Gitaxian probed me, and Gataxian Probe says, look at the player's hand, not it is revealed. So you can't just, you know, reveal the hand to the whole table. He started writing down the contents of my hand, and another player was just like looking at the notepad. So I called a judge and I was like, this information's for this player. This player is just reading the notes. What are we going to do about this? And there was a conversation where the judge was like, the player can do what they want with the information they've gained. They can't reveal your hand, but also you need to hide your notes better. And the player got kind of spiteful about it and was like, fine, here are the contents of the hand. And just as he wrote down on his notepad in his lap under the table, just announced, he was just like, ad nauseum, tainted pact, underworld breach, just listed all seven cards in my hand out loud, but he wasn't allowed to reveal them. And my hand was just bonkers. It was like, it was all the engines. I was ready to just make three win attempts on my turn. And I didn't want the table to know that. So like my line was like, oh, ad nauseum, huh? That's a good one. Oh, I have tainted pact too. Oh, and demonic consultation. Wow. If you're going to paint me as a threat, at least make it plausible. Jesus Christ, man. And like, then he had to hand my hand back to me. And I don't know if that worked, but I spent the next couple turns like playing a land that the player didn't name and like discarding to hand size cards that he didn't name and just like trying to throw the scent off, trying to help the other two players forget what my seven cards actually are. And like, look, you've seen five cards since the time I got Git probed. None of them are the named cards.
And
like,
then if I'm not mistaken,
you gonna believe this guy?
If I'm not mistaken, this is the game you won with Final Fortuning into a Crom Beats win, right?
Yes. And well, there was another moment that in that game, that player who with the Gataxian Probe was like being kind of catty throughout the whole game, like kind of particular, and that's not a shot at them, just like, you know, play style, whatever. They identified me as a threat. I identified them as correctly identifying that I'm the threat. So we kind of got into a little bit. And on the final turn, he passed his final turn. I killed all three players with combat damage this game, non-commander combat damage. On that player's final turn, they were at three, and they passed the turn to me. And as I untapped, he's like, if you attack me with Crom, I'm going to Force of Vigor your two most important permanents on the way out. And I was like, okay, attack you with Gilded Drake. He just died anyway. And he was like, oh, okay, good play. like attacking that player with Crom wasn't even the right play, because there was a Rakdos player still at the table who I'd rather deal more damage to. So like, okay, you take three from Gilded Drake that also kills you, and I'll send the Crom at the player that needs to take it.
That's funny. That's like such a, all those stories are just like such a cool like view of like a CDH tournament. And like, if I recall correctly, with that Gataxian Probe situation, notes that are taken in game are public information. So like, even if he's writing down what's in your hand, any player at the table can say, can I see your notes? And they're allowed to view that information because it has to be public.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. The judge just, Libby, the head judge, who is invested in CEDH and has helped write the CEDH tournament documents, which cover gaps that two-player tournament documents aren't meant to cover. Monarch has like a whole crazy document.
Yeah.
It's actually so official looking that Toby Elliott reached out to Nick and was like, hey, can you put a note at the top of this that this isn't official, because it looks official. It looks like we wrote it. And Libby ruled in the moment, like, you could do what you want with this information, but you should cover up these particular notes. I don't know.
Yeah. Something too that, like, since we got into the topic of politics, was that you talk about like the idea of like, shut up and play your cards, like yada yada yada, that doesn't exist, you're not playing the game, so on and so forth. And you talked about earlier how like you start with the best deck in the format, which is why you decided to play Blue Farm. I guess a question that I want to ask you, because the opinions of some of the people that we interact with a lot are very different on that topic, on what's the best deck in the format. Me and Kian believe it's Blue Farm, or at least we have for a while, and there's a new deck that is coming up that we think has contention against it, which is Najeela. Other friends of ours will preach tooth and nail that Silas Rog is the best deck in the format. So what drew you to the conclusion that Blue Farm is the best deck in what I need to play?
That's just what I was hearing kicking around. Just two commanders that make card advantage, the ability to play four colors, including Dockside, blue and black. That's important. Like, I wanted to be in the red space for Dockside, and blue and black, I think, are required. And then from there, just kind of filled in Jin Makram as a deck that made sense to me. And I want to be clear that I am not invested in what the best deck is. I don't think that conversation is fruitful. Like, arguing no Najeela is better than Timnachrom, better on what axis? Better at this, better at that, just is more likely to win a tournament, has more current tournament results. Like, on what axis are we arguing what the best deck is? And in what way does that inform our play or deck building decisions? That's just, you know, whatever, scoreboard. I won the tournament. Like, that's kind of... I actually had a moment... and I know he won't mind this. I'm in a Discord with the Rog Silas circle jerk, and they all watched my tournament report on my channel from Oko, where I said, I'm not trying to win the game on turn two more often. I'm trying to be in the game on turn five as often as possible. That's just kind of where I build my decks to be, like, raise the floor, not the ceiling. I'm not thinking about my nut draw. I'm thinking about everyone else's nut draw and how I beat it. And Alex McKinley said in our chat, I don't know that I agree with playing to turn five in a CDH game. And I just replied, scoreboard. Whatever, man. I won the tournament. It felt good. Not that I won the tournament is just means I'm right about everything, but, you know.
But it does.
Until someone with one of these new Najeela builds or whatever is changing the landscape out there, shows up with the Rog'Sai and wins a 100-something player tournament, then I don't know. Then keep your theory in the theory land, because I have a practical finish here.
Yeah, the last three major tournaments in our community, and we'll see if it happens again today, but the last three tournaments have been won by Blue Farm. So there's definitely there's definitely some validity to that comment. And the different play styles of the players that have won it, I think it's you and Tremnek, who's another like seasoned Blue Farm player, play that whole I'm trying to make it to the late game strategy. I'm not trying to win faster than everyone. I'm trying to win better than everyone.
Yeah, when your commander is just air elemental that draws cards, you get like a thing that I hadn't played enough games to really understand, but really came out over the long 2 days at Oko, was when you get into those mid-game, everybody's stacked up, nobody's really attempting wins because everyone has seven cards in their hand moments, you're basically waiting for someone to mess up, like break the move out of turn and cause a fight that lets you win. And someone with 20 Krom damage needs to do something. And it's not hard to just over five turns poke the same person with Krom four or five times. That 16 or 20 Krom damage range, folks are like, I'm about to die. I don't care what's responsible anymore. My tournament is about to end. I'm going to start casting spells. And you can force the action, like force that moment where a fight starts and they gotta do something about it.
Yeah.
Well, Kian, do you want to do your favorite thing?
Moving on to the best segment of the show, the fan favorite segment. So for those of you just tuning in or don't know what the segment is, it is where I, Kian, try to stump the cast and you guys with some challenging flavor text trivia. If you'd like to participate, listen carefully and put your answer in the Discord flavor text channel for a chance to win a free pack on us. So let's get started. So I'm going to start with you guys on the podcast first. I think this is going to be an easy one for one of you. It's a CDH card. All right. The ancestor saved us for a purpose.
This is for us?
This is for you guys.
The ancestors saved us for a purpose.
Is this Teshar?
Is it, did you get it first try?
Yeah.
Too good. Brian is too
easy,
good.
All right, easy.
Let me dive in a little bit deeper. We got round two. Sometimes the smallest things make the biggest difference.
Sometimes the smallest things make the biggest difference. Well, if I know you, Kian, I know that you're looking at the Teshar deck list right now, which is why you're picking cards from this.
I thought it would fit. His first CDH deck is Teshar.
The smallest things make the biggest difference. Oryx Salvagers?
Nope.
The smallest.
There's a bunch of creatures in that deck that recur or tutor artifacts that cost one or zero, or there's some, they're gated by mana value.
You're on the right track.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is, I did an entire, like, for Monarch when I worked there, I did an entire, like, read through YouTube short of Teshar, and I have no fucking idea what's in the deck besides Clarklan Ironworks.
Yeah, I can picture all the creatures, but I haven't actually held them in my hands in a while. There's like a 1/1 that sacks for one white to recur an artifact. Is it that one?
Okay. Nope.
Is it, so it's, I'm assuming it is a white creature, correct, Kian?
Nope.
No? So what else is in KCI? It's an artifact?
It's either some egg that you recur or something that recurs the egg, because that's the whole deck. It's not a white creature. Scrap Trawler.
It's not Scrappy T.
A Mirror Retriever.
No, but it's one of those effects. It's like the third. Oh, no. It's like the third or fourth.
the third one.
It's from Kaladesh.
Kaladesh.
Oh. Kaladesh.
Oh, it's that 1/3 creature. Is it a 1/3?
No.
No. I can picture it. I don't know the name. And I don't think thinking about it's going to come up.
Worse. No, this is the point where, like, if it's on the tip of our tongue and we don't know, I would usually look it up. But maybe Kian.
I can see the art. I can see the art in my head. But I don't know the name. And it's not going to come.
Okay. You can spoil it for us, Kian.
Workshop Assistant.
Yeah, that's the one.
1/2. When it dies, return another artifact card from your graveyard to your hand.
It's okay. We won in the real one, Brian. You got it on the first try.
Yeah, snapped off Teshar easily.
I was like, maybe he doesn't read the cards besides the actual text on it. Maybe he doesn't read flavor text. I was wrong.
Yeah. So I do read flavor text. I enjoy flavor text. There's this phenomenon though that I have talked to other Magic players about, and some people do it too, where in my head, I get a feel for the art of a card, where if you just like showed me that card from 100 yards away, just across the football field, I'd squint and be like, oh yeah, that's Crawl Space. Or just like whatever was any random card from history, I could just, you know, eyeball the art. But if you say to me, describe the art of Crawl Space, can't do it. It's like, I don't know, there's like a goblin or something. He's like in a room. Like, I don't actually know what's happening in the art, but I do get a like brain feel for the art.
You have Scryfall downloaded into your head to the point where like you are like the card reader on Spell Table, where as long as you see it, you know what it is, but you can't tell it back to someone.
There's a thing that Carmen Handy does where when she sees their opponent in the tank, she will quote the flavor text of the card that she thinks they're thinking about and just melt their brains.
That's Chad magic.
Yeah, absolutely. Ari Lax shouts out the name of every card in your hand, but the name, quoting the flavor text of the card in your hand is just the next level of the naming all the cards in your hand game.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
All right, so for the audience's flavor text, the whispers are incomprehensible, yet senders always hear a message of urgency. The whispers are incomprehensible, yet senders always hear a message of urgency. So comment that or tell us that in the Discord channel, Flavor Text Judge, and whoever has it in by, I think, like 2 or 3 days after it, we'll do a drawing and you guys get a pack. So, bing bong. All right, moving on.
Fuck your life.
Big bong, fuck your mother. All right, moving on. So we know from experience that you're avid lover of casual EDH. I was about to say casual CDH.
That's what the C is for.
Casual.
Tell us a little bit about your passion for the game and how do you use your experience from casual at a competitive level, if it's applicable.
There's this misconception about Magic pros or people who play Magic for a living or have won tournaments that they're just computers who, if the cards just didn't have art and were just numbers, they'd be happier that way, which is just preposterous because every single person started as just, oh, what's that? That looks cool. Is that a dragon? How do I play this? And I imagine at this point in history, you could find some counterexamples of like a Yu-Gi-Oh god who just decided to learn Magic and won some tournaments real quick and didn't really, wasn't really inspired as like a little kid by seeing cool art and fantasy stuff on cards. But most of us started that way where we've played some Dungeons and Dragons or we just liked Lord of the Rings or, you know, whatever it is that pulled you into the fantasy space and just playing cards rules, Magic rules. And you don't have to be winning a tournament all the time. You don't have to be spiking all the time. You don't need to win every game. And it's really nice to sit down at a table with friends and do something silly or do something just non-competitive or whatever and remind yourself why Magic rules. Is the cure for Magic discourse is playing Magic. And I believe that, especially paper Magic. Not that I dislike Modo or even Spell Table, but really just sitting at a table with other people and shuffling and deploying Magic cards is just the balm for the soul, at least for me. And just staying in touch with what Magic's really about and having fun and with friends and stuff. I would rather do that in the evening than play more Timnachrom in a CDH pod. To wake up and do more of that the next morning in the tournament. Like I want to be somewhere else in my head.
Yeah, that's that was something that really surprised me when we first met. It was like we were at Mikey's because I was staying there too, and like I walk into the back room after like I grab a beer, I walk in the back room, and all of a sudden like you're in a casual pod with everybody, and you're like, all right, losers, get prepared. Here's my best spell in my deck. And it's like some fucking, not even a casual bomb. It's like, just like a thing.
Oh, it's Doomwake Giant. Yeah. Elder Drunk and Highlander, Josh, he was playing his bear theme deck, just 2/2 bears. And he had so many bears. And I drew Doomwake Giant and just killed all the bears. Like, I wasn't sure I was going to win this game. Go off.
Yeah, it was just so funny just like to walk in the room and then you're just like, all right, losers, get ready for this shit.
I think I said buckle up nerds.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Buckle up nerds. That was one of the funniest things I'd ever seen. And then playing casual with you, it was so much fun because like there is like this factor. They're like, I definitely had this perception that like, you know, 60 card players or pro players in general are just these robots in a simulation. And I'm going to sit down and this guy's just going to be putting his spells on the stack and tell you to hurry up. And no, you're like fucking shit talking people, fucking like having a good time. Yeah. Yeah, it was so much fun.
Yeah, I love the just friendly shit talk, like ball busting and, you know, teasing, taunting, as long as everyone's having fun with it. If I see anyone is not having fun with that, we dial it back. But you actually can't do that at a tournament. That's like it's unsporting. There is unsporting, which is a defined penalty that comes with consequences, and then there is not sporting, which is you didn't break any rules but you're not being cool right now. And I avoid both of those like the plague. Like, I'm not gonna taunt or tease an opponent. Like, I remember when you bolted my irrelevant creature 2 turns ago, take 3.
Yeah.
Like from this better 3/3, you know, I'm not gonna do that, but I'm gonna do that at every opportunity in a casual game.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, don't you wish you had the Terminate for this after they cast their Terminate on something else.
Something that I'll always remember is the we did a tournament at Magic 30, a little underground like CDH tournament, and me and you got paired up in the first round. And we're playing a game, and I'm playing like Timnathrasi. I got like a seed board. I have like the card advantage engine like completely online. and I'm like making deals with the player. I have like a notion thief that's stopping you from drawing. And I'm like, all right, if you're going to kill things on my board, I'm talking to this other player. I'm like, don't kill my notion thief because it stops Brian. You can kill the seed board. And you're just like, shut the fuck up, man. Like, you're like, we're playing Magic and you're not. You're just talking. You're like, just stop. And then like later in the game, I did something like I tried to like win the game when like it seemed like I was very far behind. And you, like, I think you stifled, like I like somehow you stifled my win attempt. And I was like, well, not bad though, right? And you went, yeah, for a fucking kid. And I was like, what? And it was like one of the funniest moments I've ever had in CDH. And I just remembered that. I'm like, okay, Brian's fucking cool.
Yeah. Like, and CEDH outside of tournaments is still casual. I just want to be clear, if we're not, you know, like registered, if there's not judges around, if we're not playing for a prize, we are still playing casual Magic, even if we're playing at the competitive meta. So yeah, that like trash talk, that goofing around. Yeah, in that game, there was an Ishai at 21 power, or it could be Jeskied up and kill a player. And you were completely rolled up with Seedborn Muse and every engine in your deck. And then me and the other player both had flying blockers. This is the most obvious kill in history. And you're like talking through it. I'm just like, will you just kill this guy? Get him out.
I'm like, if you swing at Brian, he has to block with his Krom, and then he loses his Krom.
Yeah, he's going to lose Krom. Yeah, and you could kill Krom, or you could kill Seedborn Muse and Thrasios and all these other things and this player. And you did eventually die. You didn't win that.
No, but it was...
Just for the... Let the record show.
Yeah, let the record show. I did not win that one. But it was a good time. And that's the type of stuff that I think people, like, don't perceive, like, with I hate to constantly like bring it back to like 60 card players, but there is a perception there that people miss, that it's like, listen, like pro players, 60 card players, whoever it is, they're still Magic players, and like they play just like us, they have fun just like us. The games are no different. Just sometimes you lose because you're not as good, you know, that happens. But other than that, like, it's still like a great time, and I feel like helping fix that perception is pretty important. For the last question that we want to ask you is one that I think that we can eat up the rest of our time on, because I think it's something that you're pretty passionate about behind the scenes that not a lot of people really know about. So the last thing we wanted to ask for starters is obviously, did you have fun playing this CDH tournament? And with that, I want to know if you think you'll play in more CDH tournaments in the future, if you're going to retire, you know, on a high after you win the Super Bowl, just call it quits. And now that you've participated in a CDH event, what improvements would you make to a CDH tournament going forward? And what is some advice that you would give to tournament organizers? Because I know that you have a lot of experience with this. You've run events in the past, and you have a lot of insight towards how a tournament should be run. And Oko was a large event for CDH and kind of a little bit grandiose. And I was curious as how you perceived it, how you think it was run, and then some advice that you'd give. But let's start with, like, if you had fun and if you'll do it again.
Yeah, I had a ton of fun. Obviously, it was a great time. I think there's nowhere I'd rather be on the earth at any time than playing in a Magic tournament. That's, you know, no offense to my family and friends, but, you know, that is where I'm in my zone, and like expressing myself both intellectually and creatively, and just having, that is, you know, my safe, happy place is just playing tournament Magic for stakes, and I love it. I will definitely be playing in more CDH tournaments. I actually tried to rustle up some sponsors to get me out to Silicon Dynasty, but it turns out I'm already playing a 2-day multi-format draft tournament that day. I'm committed to that. I just didn't realize it was the same weekend. And so I'm missing Silicon Dynasty, but I'm going to be at the next two Eminence events. There's one outside Philadelphia, then one in Atlanta. And I'm planning on being at both of those over the next 6 months. And anything that's in range for me or is worth attending, that's kind of the calculation, because as a tournament grinder, you are constantly calculating EV on the trip. Like, am I likely to get my gas money, hotel money, food money back out of this? And like, there are people who treat tournaments like vacations. Like I just, I spend $500 or whatever. I spend the weekend somewhere else playing some cards and I come back. And that's just money spent on the vacation. That's not my mentality. I am trying to churn, at least let it pay for itself. But so if I got invited to something in like Washington, I live in Pittsburgh, by the way. So Washington is about the entire American continent away from me. So I can't go. And the prize was not, you know, what it would cost for me to get to Washington and back and stay there for a weekend, even if I win first place, which is a deal breaker. So the closer, the more likely I'm going to be, and any sort of sponsorship or whatever from my various sources of that would help get me there. But I'd like to be at as many as possible.
That's good to hear. Yeah. Punt City 2 is the one that's in Philly, and then the Cookout's the one at Atlanta. Those are going to be all really good events. I know that I'm trying to get our crew, the Sadnos guys, to go to Punt City 2. I have this inclination. Well, for one, I work the events, so there's that. And then I have this inclination that Punt City 2 will be probably one of the biggest CDH tournaments of all time, because the one that happened last year was so big, and it's like the birthing ground of Eminence. So they're going all out for it. There's also going to be one at the end of the year that if you get a chance, you should try to go to. It's going to be Nationals, which will eventually sneak peek. It's going to be in Illinois. So it'll be in Chicago. So that event will probably be like the largest CDH tournament ever. But yeah, these are all cool events. And it's cool to hear that you keep showing interest in them, and hopefully you keep winning them, because that's, you know, that's kind of a cool thing to win a tournament, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I am in a place in my life, we're recording this early December, and I'm hoping to no longer have a day job by January. And that's just going to free up these sort of trips. Like it might increase my range, because flying to Chicago and then getting back in time for work on Monday is just another calculation. It's even more than just the cost or EV. It's opportunity cost of sleeping before I have to go to work on Monday.
Yeah.
Like all of those sort of things. And if my job is just Magic the Gathering, then that makes a lot of this easier too.
100%. And then, so the other half of this question then is, now that you've participated in a CDH event, what are improvements that you'd make to CDH tournaments going forward? And what is some advice that you'd give to tournament organizers?
The main advice that I would give is you don't need to blow out money on the experience. Both Mikey from Eminence and Nick from Monarch have my direct contact info. They both occasionally message me with a question or something. Earlier this year, I spent hours on calls with them, just talking about stuff, just bringing I've played thousands of Magic tournaments over the last 20 years, and bringing that into what I can bring, giving that to them. But one of the big mistakes, I think, is going all out on the venue. Magic players will happily play in like a VFW hall or whatever. Just the cheapest thing is fine. We like free parking. We like having food around that we can eat during the tournament and after the venue. Star City figured out a while ago, after running events in Center City, Philadelphia for a while, that the Valley Forge Casino is like 10 minutes away from Center City, Philadelphia, and it has infinite free parking. It's a casino, so it has restaurants in it. People can drink. There's a bar, and it's a cheaper venue to rent as well. And Star City Games, if you look at anyone for efficiency of how to model a tournament series, look to Star City Games, because I think they're the best that ever did it. And if they're not holding their events in, you know, Center City, if they're off in Valley Forge Casino, or if they're in Worcester instead of Boston proper for their events, if they're in Palmetto instead of Miami down in Florida, like, figure out why, because they know something you don't. Or if they're in Chantilly instead of Washington, D.C., these are all like real things. They call it, you know, like SCG D.C., but it's in Chantilly, which is actually pretty far from D.C., but close enough to be regionally appropriate, but it just don't waste your money on a big fancy venue. You don't need to rent out Mox boarding house. You could hold that down the street at a VFW. And that's not a shot at anyone. I talked to Nick after he held his big event at Mox boarding house. And I just like Googled while we were talking VFWs in Seattle. And I was like, you could have had this whole venue for $300 for the weekend. And he was like, God damn. So yeah, players don't need a fancy ballroom. They don't need to be in a cityscape. It just, you know, playing the cards is worth more than the ambiance. Don't pay too much for ambiance, I guess would be
my
take.
You just need tables and chairs.
Yeah, tables, chairs. If the chairs are comfortable, that's better. But it's also not a requirement. Like, for real, I've played in a lot of weird places. One of my favorite tournaments I ever played in was in a flea market. It was in one of those, like, stand... There were, like, farm stands and random knickknacks. Like, people bring their, like, hand-knitted sweaters and sell them out of stalls. And the room we played in had those, like, plastic flaps that, like, meat lockers have. Like, the clear plastic flaps yeah. that come yeah. straight down and you have to push through to go in. And that was one of my favorite tournaments I ever played in. Just free parking, cheap food nearby, chairs we could sit in. You don't need much for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think that that's, like, the players care more about the event than they care about the experience around it more times than not, right? Like I go, like, I'm one of those people that go to CDH events as a or tournaments as a vacation, right? Like, I get to take a Friday and a Monday off of work. I get to spend the weekend with some of my best friends from the internet and get to play my favorite game. And, like, whatever happens, happens. And, like, as long as I'm spending time with my friends, that's what matters. Like, it doesn't matter that I'm in a huge expensive hall. Doesn't matter that, you know, I'm in downtown of wherever we're at. Like, we could be in an empty warehouse filled with tables and chairs, and as long as there's, like, you know, a Subway nearby and a bar, like, I'm pretty happy, because you know, you can take care of what you need to take care of. And, like, as long as you have good vendors at the venue, I think too, like, if you have people with cards and cards that people want to buy, like, that stuff matters more so than, like, you know, who's at the event or where it's being held is what I usually say.
Right. And I guess I should specify the difference between, like, tournament and command fest. Because a command fest, we're all gathering in this spot, let's hang out, should probably be in a center city where you can go get a really nice dinner because everybody's just there on vacation. But a tournament, you're there playing timed rounds all day long. You're probably getting out of the venue between 8 and 10 p.m. both nights, and you're not going to have time to, you know, go see a show in New York City or whatever. Yeah. Magic 30 in Vegas. I signed up for the tournaments on Friday, Saturday, and my only free day was Sunday. And my friends were, like, getting 5-star meals at these Vegas Michelin star restaurants and seeing Cirque du Soleil. And I'm just like, yeah, I have 3 rounds of Modern left. It's just, you don't need all that if you're there for a tournament, but if you are there on vacation, it is worth a lot. And just know what kind of event you're throwing, I guess.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, that's besides, like, the venues and everything else, like, do you think there's any, like, advice you'd give for how to run it, or do you think that the community has a pretty good handle on that so far?
I haven't played enough to really judge anything. I've just played the one event, and it was held by Monarch. I have not played an Eminence event, and I know they slightly differ in their policies and everything. It seems just a competent judge staff is important. Looking professional is important. All of those things. Like, I want to know that if I call a judge, the problem will be solved correctly. I don't want a confused looking tournament staff who's not a certified Magic judge being like, oh, well, it sounds reasonable if we do it this way. Like, no, let's do something clean here, which I think everyone's doing. I would like to see some solution to untimed rounds, because the timing, there was a 3-hour match in the quarterfinals of Oktober. It was just kind of multiple stacks, poking at each other here and there, And I think there were some judge calls involved that ate up a bunch of time. And the thing took 3 hours, which is preposterous. But also, I do really like the idea of letting the elimination rounds play out to their natural conclusion. Because going to sudden death life totals or whatever, like some decks use their life. If you're just like, have a turn one Necropotence and then the game goes to time, you've lost. Even if you might still win that game. Like, I don't know. I don't like it. There's not an elegant solution to that. Maybe it is just take your medicine and some games take 3 hours. Hope that they don't. But that was kind of rough.
Yeah.
That's when you came and found me playing Puzzle Quest. I was just laying in the side room, just trying not to fall asleep, doing anything to stimulate my brain as this match just dragged and dragged.
Yeah, the untimed rounds get ridiculous.
Yeah, then for day one, they did have to cut a whole round. Like, then it was supposed to be 7 rounds, but they only did 6 because of all, like, the judge calls and, like, time extensions and whatever happened.
It was supposed to be 6 rounds day one, 1 round day two. It ended up being 5 rounds day one, 2 rounds day two. They actually put it to a vote of the players of, do you want to cut a whole round off the tournament or play 2 tomorrow?
Yep.
I actually think that putting things to a vote to the players is a mistake too. I think the tournament experts should make that decision and tell people what's happening. I understand the urge to make the most people happy, but at some point the people in charge need to make a decision that will make sense for the event.
Yeah. I think the way it ended up was fine, but yeah, we talked a little bit amongst ourselves about how, like, that was a little weird. Like, yeah. The option where we could just be like, if like the majority of players who had a winning record already were like, yeah, cut the fucking round, you know, like,
yep,
that could have,
yep, cut it. We're good. Cut to top 8 right, yeah, now. I'm ready.
Yeah. Like, that could have changed a lot of things. So it was, I feel like the way it ended up was fine, but that could have been handled really misproperly.
Right. Yeah. And I was in a bubble table when that survey was given. Like, I was playing for my third win, I think. And it was everyone with 3 wins said, cut the round. Everyone who didn't have 3 wins yet said, we want to play all the rounds. Like, obviously, yeah, which is how that's going to go every time. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Just making executive decisions that are going to benefit the event the most. And running with them rather than putting anything to a vote. I would prefer it that way.
No, that makes sense. Well, I think we're going to wrap up here. But before we wrap up, I do want to say, Brian, congratulations on winning Oktoberfest. That was really cool to witness. It was really cool to be a part of. And hopefully this is the first of many storied accomplishments in your CDH career. And, you know, maybe we'll convert Bosch and Roll to a CDH content channel. We'll see where things go. But but hopefully, you know, I think that I think it was really cool to kind of show up, put your money where your mouth is, and take the whole thing down. That was it was definitely impressive to witness from a player's perspective. And, you know, hopefully more people will approach you in the community, see you, talk about you, get some insight and practice some of the things that you preach, because I think you bring a lot of important insight to the community and to deck building and to things that a lot of players just overlook or don't consider. So, yeah, just wanted to put that out there right away. Other than that, we're going to move to our cleanup now. So, Brian, this is the last chance to show whatever you want at the end. I don't know if you saw what I did there, but I can't use Final Fortune or Warrior's Oath to give you an extra turn, so we'll have to go with Last Chance.
Well, damn, you really missed your chance for glory on that one.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, got him. All right, it's time to walk into my pitch. I am Bosch and Roll everywhere, and primarily YouTube. Hit me up on Twitter, my Patreon, if you want me to play decks. If you want to convert me to a CDH channel, I play what my Patreon send me. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Check out Eternal Glory Podcast. All of us are into CDH too, and there's just general big format concepts kicked around there, whether we're talking about CDH that day or not. And yeah, that's my stuff.
Awesome. Well, let's get into our stuff. Again, we want to thank all of our high tier patrons. So thank you to Dude, Usable Object, Senator Tom, Scorish, Jeff Bezos, Unorthodox Bird, Domino, Geos Justin, and our newest high tier patron, Just Ice. Thank you, Chad, guys, for the support. Support from our patrons is what makes us here at Sad Dogs continue to pump out this amazing content. So thank you again for everything. For those of you that haven't joined our Discord, dude, what the fuck, man? I say it every fucking week. Get in there. We're having fun. We're talking about shit that you're not a part of. We're talking about you behind your back and you don't even know it. So get in our Discord, chat with us, talk about deck building, talk about, you know, I don't know if you want to learn about what we do in Wisconsin, cheese curds and beer drinking, whatever it is, come in there. We have a lot of fun. And it's a good time. And whether you're listening on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcast, or anywhere else, make sure that you like, subscribe, leave a comment, or drop us a review. It really helps with growing our channel and gives us the ability to work with new people like the amazing Brian Colville, Mr. Bosch and Roll. And with that, I think we're going to end the episode here. So you guys have a great week, and we'll see you on the next one.
Peace out.